You could turn to Exodus chapter 3 if you'd like to. We're going to start there. Years ago, decades ago, somebody that was helping some of us to try to develop spiritually, one of the things that he taught us was, he said, I'm not really so much interested in you writing down everything that I say. He said, what I really want you to write down is what gets inspired in your heart by what I say. I mention that because I don't remember what it was that Wesley said a few weeks ago. There was something that he said that really triggered something inside of me. And I approached him after that fellowship. I said, you know, this could be something really neat to share. Like I say, I don't remember what it was he said, but I know it really triggered something. So here we are in Exodus chapter 3. And before we start looking at a few verses here, one of the things that I wanted to point out is that as I was working this stuff, the word devoted kept coming to my mind. Well, finally, after so many times, I said, all right, you know, so I looked it up in the dictionary. And a basic definition of the word devoted is a person's, they focus their attention and their activities on whatever it is that they're devoted to because of their affection for that which they are devoted to. And that would really be something to keep in mind while we read some of the verses that we're going to look at, okay? So here in Exodus chapter 3, this is after the burning bush stuff. I just want to look at some people's initial responses to God when God gave them information or instructions. You've probably heard of this guy before. His name's Moses. You might have heard of him. Exodus chapter 3. God had said some things to Moses. And here in verse 10, God says, come now, therefore, and I'm going to send you to Pharaoh that you may bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, that's a great idea. I'm all over it. Moses said to God, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? Does it sound like Moses was really on board with this thing? Not exactly. And so that's why this is the last time you ever hear about Moses in the entire Bible. God says, well, nuts to you. Not exactly. So after he said that, you know, there continued to be a conversation between God and Moses. And we'll get down to chapter 4, verse 1. After the things that God had said to Moses. And Moses answered and said, okay, now I'm all over it. He said, Moses said, but look, they're not going to believe me. They're not even going to listen to me. For they're going to say, the Lord hasn't appeared to you. So, you know, he's still, but remember that word devoted, because Moses could have said in chapter 3, verse 11, this conversation is over with, right? He could have. He had free will, right? But he didn't. So they're still conversing. Now here it is in chapter 4, verse 1. He says, look, they're not going to believe me. They're not even going to listen to me. They're going to say, the Lord hasn't appeared to you. And yet, Moses is still not saying, I'm done. Forget it. You know, subject is closed. Look at, did we skip over some? No, I don't think we did. Blah, 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 Moses said. Oh, yeah, verse 10. You know, like, had some more stuff happen. And Moses said to the Lord, oh, my Lord, now I'm with you. Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent. You know, first, you know, who am I? Chapter 3, verse 11. Chapter 4, verse 1, I can't talk good. Now here's in verse 10. You know, I'm not eloquent, or no, verse, different stuff. I can't talk good, nor neither heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant. I'm slow of speech and of a slow tongue. I trip all over myself. I get my words wixed all the time. I'm not a good public speaker. This is just not a good idea. So, in verse 11, we'll read a little bit. And the Lord said to him, who made man's mouth? Or who makes the dumb or deaf or the seeing or the blind? Haven't I done those things? Verse 12, now therefore get out of here. Go. I'll be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say. And Moses said, okay, you're right. No. Verse 13. And he, Moses, said, "Oh, my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send." That's a bad translation there. Some of you might, Pratt West, you got it in your Bible in the margin. It says the word "wilt" is the word "shouldest." And that's how it should have been translated. Send by the hand of him whom thou shouldest send. You know that even without looking at the Hebrew, if you read the first part of the next verse, verse 14, first part says, "And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses." Well, if Moses had said in verse 13, "Send by the hand of him who you want to send," God would have said, "All right, now he's on board." Because obviously I've been talking to Moses. It's obvious Moses is the one I want to send. Now Moses is saying, "Send by the hand of the one who you want to send." All right. Why would the anger of the Lord be kindled against Moses if he said, "Send by the hand of him who you want"? He wouldn't. That lets you know the word "shouldest" is the way that it "shouldest" have been translated. Yeah. Not "send by the hand of him whom thou wilt send." Send the guy you ought to be sending. Moses is saying, "I don't know why you're telling me all this stuff. Tell this stuff to the guy you ought to be telling this stuff to." This is all, you know, but is Moses still talking with God about it? Was Moses responding this way because Moses had a lack of reverence for God? No. Was Moses responding that way because he had a lack of love for God? No. Why was Moses responding that way? Moses, because of Moses' devotion to God, Moses didn't want God to get egg on God's face. When Moses went to do something that Moses was not qualified to do, Moses falls flat on his face, and that gives God a bad name. Moses is telling God, it's a great idea, God. I love the idea. But just give this info to the right guy. If you tell me to do this, it's going to make you look bad because I don't have the ability to do this. And yet, God kept, and one of the reasons God was able to keep working with Moses was because Moses had that attitude toward God. The word "devoted," I think of it like a little boy with a puppy dog. You just can't get enough of it. You love that puppy dog. Not that God's a little puppy dog, but just that element of devotion, that just, you know, the focus of their attention, the focus of their activities because of their affection for that little puppy dog. They just can't get enough of it. Moses was like that with God, which you can read that later on, you know, other places. You can see that he was that way. He wasn't being disrespectful of God. He was just being straight up with him. Great idea, wrong guy. See? Yeah. Look at Judges chapter 6, please. And these things are, I think they can be great for us because, you know, sometimes, would you say that idea that God gave to Moses, you think that might qualify in the category of being like a staggering idea to Moses' mind? You know, if God told you, "I'm going to send you to the emperor of China, and they're going to bring, and you're going to cause all the manufacturing to come back to the United States of America." Yeah, I'm sure that's going to happen. That's about how Moses was with this. Mm-hmm. You're going to go talk to Pharaoh. He's going, "Oh, yeah, right." And I'm the guy for, "Yeah, sure." You know, same sort of a deal. Put yourself in the sandals of these people. Judges chapter 6, if I get there. We'll start in verse 14, I guess. Angel Lord appears to Gideon, and, you know, they had a little conversation back and forth. And verse 14 says, "And the Lord looked upon him, Gideon, and said, Go in this thy might, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent you?" And Gideon, and he, verse 15, Gideon said unto him, to the angel, "That's a great idea." No, he said, "Oh, my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Look, my family is poor in Manasseh. I come from a poor family, and I'm the least in my father's house. I'm the least in this family, this poor to begin with. And you're telling me I'm going to do this?" That kind of almost sounds like Moses' response, doesn't it? Kind of almost. And so then they had a little discourse back and forth, which we're going to skip a bunch of it. I think we'll pick up in verse 34. But after the things that we skipped over. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and Abiezer was gathered after him. Now, when it says the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, really critical point, which we didn't really look at with Moses, but it runs throughout these records. These were not situations where somebody came up with an idea by their human intellect. They said, ha ha, I got a great idea. And I know that God's going to back me up on this thing because it's just such a great idea. It wasn't that way. It was sort of the opposite. God came up with the idea, and their initial response was, that's really not a very good idea. Right? That's the way it was. So here in verse 34, when it says the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, that's letting us know God's the one that sort of nudged him in the ribs. Hey, Gideon, you know, blow a trumpet, call these people after you. Verse 35, and he, Gideon, sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also was gathered after him, and he sent messengers unto Asher, and unto Zebulun, and unto Naphtali, and they came up to meet him. Now it says they came up. That's past tense. If you jump forward a little bit, which we're not going to do, by the time you get to the end of verse 35, you have over 30,000 people who have all gathered together here because Gideon is the one who says, okay, everybody, come on. Now put yourself in Gideon's sandals. You got over 30,000 people. All right, we're ready to go. What should we do now? Let me go change my shorts first, and I'll get back to you on that. Verse 36, and Gideon said unto God, did he say since?
No.
No. You would think that by this point he's going to be saying since. He's still saying if. Does that word indicate certainty? Not exactly. Verse 36, and Gideon said to God, if you're going to save Israel by my hand, as thou hast said. Now God said that back in verse 14. And then you got the whole fleece thing that happens and the record goes on. Point about the fleece, Gideon said, as thou hast said. People, quote unquote, put out their fleeces to see what God's will is. Gideon was not doing that. Gideon said, as thou hast said. Gideon already knew what God's will was. Gideon had a little bit of a confidence problem. I mean, it's one which put yourself in Gideon's sandals. Okay, here you are. There's over 30,000 people. All right, we're here. Now what? Hey, God, you know, you know, he just needed some help with his confidence. And God helped him with that. Again, it was not that Gideon was, he wasn't doubting God. Gideon was not doubting God. Gideon was doubting Gideon. Like with Moses. Moses was not doubting God. Moses was doubting Moses. There's 1 Samuel 16, 7. The Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance. Lord looks on the heart. God saw something in Moses that Moses did not see in Moses. God saw something in Gideon that Gideon did not see in Gideon. And that's something good for us to keep in mind. God, just the possibility might exist that God might see something in you that you do not see in you. Possibility. So God kept working with it. Look at Jeremiah chapter 1. Same sort of deal. Isaiah, Jeremiah. We're just going to look at a few. Jeremiah chapter 1, where people who, and again, we know Moses, I mean, he really did some wonderful things at God's instruction. Moses didn't come up with these ideas and say, hey, God, I've got a great idea. How about, here we are in front of the sea, how about if I lift up my stick here and you part the ocean, we can all walk through on dry ground. None of the things that you read about are where somebody came up with a great idea and they quote unquote believed God to make it happen. It was just the opposite. God came up with the idea and said, here's what I want you to do. And when they did what God told them to do, that's when it happened. So, same with Gideon, same with Moses. Look at Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5 says, before I formed you in the belly, talking to Jeremiah, I knew you. And before you came forth out of the womb, I set you apart and ordained you a prophet unto the nations. Verse 6, then said I, that's great. This is going to be a terrific trip. I'm looking forward to it. Not exactly, right? His initial response was, then said I, oh, Lord God, looky here. I can't speak. I'm a child. What are you telling me this for? Verse 7, but the Lord said to me, don't give me that stuff. Don't say to me, I'm a child, for you shall go to all that I shall send you. And whatever I tell you to speak, that's what you're going to say. Really interesting here with Jeremiah. There's no further discourse back and forth between Jeremiah and God, where God had to continue to coax Jeremiah or try to coax him into it. This is all there is. Be not afraid of their faces, verse 8. The faces there means like their positions or their titles, their prominence. Don't be afraid, oh, that's President so-and-so, or that's Pharaoh, or that's this or that. Don't be afraid of that junk. Because, verse 8, for I am with you to deliver you. And that's a great thing too, you know. Yeah, all those big boys, but I'm with you. You know, that makes a difference, right? There's, in Psalm 42:5, in the King James, you can turn it, I don't care, but it says, the help of thy countenance, I think is how the verse ends. Another translation of that last part of Psalm 42:5 could be, thy presence is salvation. I love that. Just God said, I'll be with you. God's presence is deliverance. How's it going to happen? I don't know, but God's here. Isn't that great? So, and then, you know, there's no more discourse where God is trying to coax Jeremiah into speaking for him. It was quick. You know, with Moses, it was not. With Gideon, it was not. With Jeremiah, it was. People are different. You know, it's not like, well, you should do this because so-and-so did it. You're not so-and-so, right? You're you. You know, so God works with you. I love manifestations today. Not that I ever don't, but it was wonderful. I love that song, Tenderly He Watches Over You. You know, He works with us. He's not going to work with you the way He works with anybody else, probably because you're not anybody else. You know, let's look at the book of Amos, chapter 7. Sort of along the same line. I don't know where Amos is, but it's in the Old Testament somewhere.
Amos, Obadiah, John, and Micah.
After Joel.
Where is it?
After Joel.
Page 1072.
Sorry.
Before Obadiah.
I'm in the Old Testament.
Yeah, if you go backward from Matthew, you can find it maybe a little bit quicker.
Yeah. It's one of the last.
Yeah, like five or six books.
Book out.
See how often I read Amos?
That's all right. I would say it's right before Andy, but that probably would not be politically correct. So. All right. If you haven't got it, you can just listen to it.
I got it.
Okay, Amos chapter 7, and in verse 14. Well, we'll start in verse 12. Also Amaziah. Now, if you read back a few verses somewhere, Amaziah was the priest of, well, it said in verse 10, he was the priest of Bethel. Bethel was one of the great locations where they had one of the wonderful golden calves, which were such a blessing to the nation of Israel. So anyway, in verse 12, that's the guy. He was the priest of the golden calf joint. Said to Amos, O thou seer, go, run away into the land of Judah, and there you can eat bread and you can prophesy over there, but don't you prophesy again anymore at Bethel, for this is the king's chapel and it's the king's court. You want to say that stuff? You get out of here. You can go say that stuff somewhere else, but don't you say that stuff here. Verse 14. Then answered Amos and said, okay. Oh. Remember the thing in Jeremiah, be not afraid of their faces? Yeah. You think that might apply in this situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seems like maybe. Mm-hmm. Then answered Amos and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit, wild figs. That thing, a prophet's son, if you look in 1 Kings, you'll see a lot of times it's the sons of the prophets. It didn't mean that they were necessarily the genetic offspring of prophets, where their father was operating the ministry of a prophet. It meant that they were being trained by the prophets. They served with the prophets, and that's how they got trained by the prophets. Okay, no, don't do it that way. Do this. Do you see that? Okay, let's get sharp on this stuff. You know, like that. Amos says, I wasn't a prophet. I wasn't being trained by a prophet. I was a herdman and a gatherer of wild figs. People, they were edible. And this is from Bishop Pillay. He gave the Immortalisms. They were edible, but nobody really wanted to eat them. If you ever ate wild figs, sycamore fruit, you were desperate. And you brought contempt upon yourself, really. It really dropped you down to the bottom rung of society. Oh my gosh, they're a gatherer of sycamore fruit. They feed them to pigs and cows. Well, since the Jews didn't eat pigs, probably when Amos said he was a herdman, he was probably herding cattle. Not a real, it wasn't like, well, I'm a CEO on Wall Street. What do you do? Oh, I clean the toilets at the county jail. That was Amos. Not really a great, oh, we can't wait. We'll have to invite him to all of our banquets as an honored guest. Oh, what is he? He cleans toilets at the county jail. I was a herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. Verse 15, and the Lord took me as I was following the flock. And the Lord said to me, go prophesy unto my people, Judah?
Nope.
No. Israel.
Israel. And that's what he was doing. So this would be a thing where Amos, in his own eyes, I wasn't a prophet. I wasn't being trained by a prophet. I was, a shepherd, a cowboy. I was just one. There was a thousand of us. Or I was a carpenter, or I was a painter, or I was a computer programmer. There's thousands of people like that. I was just one of the crowd. But God told me to do this. I didn't have the qualifications or the credentials that everybody's looking for, maybe. But God told me to do this, and so I did what God told me to do. And I thought some of these things were great records to look at. That, Amos could have, in Amos's own eyes, he could have said, hey, whoa, like with Moses, or like with Gideon, or like with Jeremiah. You got the wrong guy. I'm just a herdman. I'm picking up this contemptible fruit. I pick this up and I drop down to the bottom of the social ladder, and you're telling me to do this? I'm not the guy. But he didn't say that. He said, God told me to do it, and I did it. And I thought that was great, in light of some of the things in manifestations today. Tenderly he watches over you. God knows you better than you know you. Mm-hmm. God knows me better than I know me. And what was it, James 5:16? Elijah was a man of like passions. So was Moses. So was Gideon. So was Jeremiah. So was Amos. So are you. We're all people. It's not like, they're like Dr. Will would say, he was way up on a pedestal. No, he wasn't. He put his jeans on one leg at a time. He got a bellyache when he ate raw figs or something. I don't know. He was a person just like you are. And God communicated, and met some of them. There was a little coaxing that was needed, but they had great love for God. I don't like the word opposition, but their resistance, it wasn't because they didn't love God. It wasn't because they didn't want to do what God wanted to do. That wasn't it. It was because they didn't want God to look bad when they did what God told them to do, and then they fell flat on their face, and people would say, what an idiot God is for sending this guy to do it. That was the thing. They didn't really believe, and they didn't see in themselves what God saw in them. So I thought that was great stuff to look at, because you might find yourself sometimes in situations like that, where God would tell you personally, I want you to do so-and-so. And you might say, great idea, wrong guy. But God knows you better than you know you. And it's a great thing to keep in mind when maybe you might get something like these guys got, and you might have a challenge like some of these guys had. That's okay. You're in very good company. Okay? Love you.